It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston, or 100.3 FM if you're in the metro Boston area. Remember, you can always listen to past programs. You can find them on johnfpaul.podcast.podomatic.com, or you can go to podcasts.com, and you should be able to find it there, too. Just search for it, or just search John Paul Car Doctor Radio, and you'll find it. Also, if you're a Facebook fan, you can go to either my Facebook page, which is Mr. John F. Paul at Facebook, or if you search Facebook for Car Doctor Podcast, you can find it there too, and you can find out all the information you need to know. This morning, we are going to be talking with Paul Clark of Paul Clark Volkswagen, maybe. We have to call into the dealership phone number, which is always a little bit tricky sometimes in the morning, so whatever time to get in, but I was told that he is expecting our call, so we'll just go like that. And also today we will be talking about the GMC Sierra pickup truck, and also this week I had the opportunity to talk with the folks at Wheels TV. Wheels TV does an annual previously owned vehicle competition, and it's a way that we all sit around as a group and try to pick our favorite based on their criteria, previously owned vehicle. We came up with some pretty interesting results. We'll debut that in a little bit of time. So I was driving through the South Weymouth former Navy base a couple months ago. And there's if you haven't been over there, it's now a big condo complex and a lot of other stuff, sports fields and a lot of other stuff going on over there. But there's this area that's all cordoned off, and it's filled with Volkswagen diesels, thousands of Volkswagen diesels. And it's my understanding that these diesels are starting to come back to market at some pretty good prices. And with us on the phone is Paul Clark of Paul Clark Volkswagen, who's going to tell us a little bit about that. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So I understand these Volkswagens have all been kind of retrofitted and brought back to life, and they're starting to come up for sale, huh?
They're in the process of it, yes. We, as Volkswagen dealers, are buying back those cars, which were bought back by Volkswagen under the court agreement. And we're buying them from Volkswagen. We are doing the emissions recalls, making them emissions compliant. And because they've sat there for a while in storage, we are doing generally brakes, tires. We learn quickly we have to, change the fuel and the fuel filter, plus air filters and cabin air filters and wiper blades and, obviously an oil change and everything else that needs to be ready. And then we have them for resale, and Volkswagen is selling them back to us at a greatly reduced price because, of what the market will bear and mm-hmm. Make them competitive. Plus, they're offering on most of them, anyone that is under 75,000 miles, a 2-year unlimited mileage bumper-to-bumper certified warranty. So our usual certified warranty is 2-year 24,000 miles, but all these cars have 2-year unlimited mileage because diesel customers potentially drive more. Plus, we have low APR financing available from Volkswagen Credit, as low as 299. And we're talking about 11s, 2012s, 2013s, 14s, and 15s, that can have, 40, 50, 60, 70, 75,000 miles. So a very, in my mind, affordably priced, quality, German-engineered used car.
Yeah, I know when people always ask me, back before all this controversy happened, if I was going to go out and buy a car, I'd say, you know, I would, you know, if I was thinking about it, I'd go out and buy a diesel, and I'd buy a diesel that was a stick shift. And if I had the choice, it would be like the Jetta Sport Wagon or Golf Sport Wagon. And just because they're fun to drive, they get ridiculously good fuel economy, and they're fun to drive again. You know, especially with the standard shift versions, they really are kind of a hoot to drive. And you know, those I guess are in some of the mix as well, right?
That's very interesting that you say that, because we've been buying back from the manufacturer and reselling these since maybe October, November, and quickly we learned that the manual transmission Sport Wagon, you know, Jetta Sport Wagon, Golf Sport Wagon is a 15, or the Golf manual transmission, those are the cars people really like. That is certainly the aficionado enthusiast car, and, you know, we can get 11s and 12s with, you know, in the 70,000 miles, go through them and sell them for, you know, as low as like $11,000, $10,900, and then up. But,
yep.
You know, it's an affordable price point, and it's a tremendous vehicle.
And like you said, when you do things like put new brakes on them, put new tires on them, put new wiper blades on them, all of a sudden now, what might have felt like a used car before feels like a new car.
It's, you know, as best we can, make it a new car. I mean,
yep.
Typically these cars were well-maintained, and, you know, before myself and the dealers select them, buy them, we look at the Carfax, and I like to buy the ones that have regular service visits and, you know, looks like it was taken care of. And some of them are a great deal more of my own customer cars where I can go into the service history and look at them. So, yeah, I mean, we make them as new as possible, and then with the two-year unlimited mileage, it's virtually a new car bumper-to-bumper warranty. So it, you know, covers virtually everything except, you know, oil changes and things that wear out like that.
Yeah, so it sounds like a great value for somebody, and for somebody who may have been a little turned off about what happened, this is certainly a good thing. And from what I understand, the fix that was done really didn't change the car a whole heck of a lot. You know, some people were concerned that all of a sudden now my peppy, torquey Volkswagen diesel that got fantastic fuel economy isn't going to be that car anymore. But from what I understand, maybe 1 or 2 miles per gallon and performance, you know, from 0 to 60 might have changed a half a second or something.
Right. You know, my customers, no one has complained to me that they have had performance that they don't like, that they've, you know, said, oh, wow, the car really doesn't perform like it did, or like a previous one that I had. So that has not been a complaint at all. Making them emissions compliant in the real world has not seemed to affect performance nor fuel economy greatly. I mean, certainly a little bit, but,
yep.
You know, yeah, they still are the car that they were, and we had, you know, 30% of our business was diesels before the you know, problem came about. So we're excited to get them back into the public, and I think there's good demand for them.
Yeah. No, a couple things before we let you go, because I know Saturday morning at car dealerships are always busy. Is there still a deal for Uber drivers with Volkswagen?
We are not. Uber's kind of taken that in-house,
oh,
so
okay.
They don't have dealers doing that as much. So we certainly sell new and pre-owned cars that are Uber-compliant, but we don't have the Uber financing anymore. They've taken that in-house.
Yeah, because that was kind of an interesting program for them and for you as well. So kind of interesting. And I was talking to your sales guy, Anthony, the other day about the all-new 2019 Jetta.
We're very excited about the Jetta. It's been totally restyled. It's gone to the new universal MQB platform, which is the underpinnings and allows Volkswagen to do a lot more variations of equipment and suspensions and engines and things like that. So, you know, it's really, you know, world-class. It's going to offer a lot more standard features such as alloys, LED headlights and taillights, and everybody loves the Apple Android CarPlay you know, systems, and that's going to be on all the cars. And they've made it really, in my mind, a little bit larger, because we've driven a few, a little bit more upscale. But, you know, they've kept the price. They're going to actually lower the price and, you know, have more content and more value.
Yeah, no, that's good. And from what I understand, they bumped the warranty quite a bit as well, right?
Yeah, and this is kind of perhaps slid under the radar, maybe because of still backlash over the TDI diesel situation, but all our 18s and now this 19 Jetta, which is going to be out by the end of the month, have a six-year, 72,000-mile bumper-to-bumper warranty. So they've, in essence, doubled the standard warranty of 336 to six-year, 72,000 miles to, you know, stand behind their vehicles and stand behind their commitment to the United States and the North American market.
And that's got to be, for bumper-to-bumper warranties, that should be the best in the country, isn't it?
I believe it is, yes. Yeah. I haven't done the investigation myself,
yeah.
But
this
is, I think it's pretty much double what everybody,
yeah,
you know, does.
Yeah, so this is really Volkswagen putting their money where their mouth is sort of thing and says, trust us, we have a good car, and just to show you we have a good car, we're gonna put a fantastic warranty on it.
Yeah, they're gonna stand behind it and stand behind it for a long time, which,
yep,
should do a lot to, you know, appease anybody that was unhappy over what happened with the diesels.
Yep. And then the other, well, there always seems to be news coming from Volkswagen, but the other one is you have a big SUV now.
We have the Alice. So the Tiguan has been restyled. It's kind of like a CR-V or a RAV4 size, but now we have an Atlas, which is like a Ford Explorer or a Toyota Highlander. So we have a full third seat, you know, SUV, and it's wonderful, and people really seem to like it. It's the demand has been exceptional.
And it really is. When I see one going down the road, I kind of squint a little bit and go, is that an Explorer?
It looks a lot like an Explorer, and I'm a former Ford dealer, so, you know, I always kind of refer to it Explorer-like. But, yeah, they've done a great job with it, and we're getting a lot of people that have other, say, domestic and imported, and we're trading in their SUVs of similar sizes, like Explorers and even Tahoes, and because Volkswagen's done such a good job on the Atlas, and the German engineering really comes through, so it's really a great vehicle to drive, and of course it's built in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so it's built in the United States.
Yeah. No, you know, for people who like to drive, you know, when people ask me about small SUVs, like you mentioned, there's, you know, some out there, but they're not driver's cars, and the new Tiguan really is. It feels like a Volkswagen. It feels like that German engineered kind of stick to the road kind of car, which a lot of compact SUVs don't feel like that. So that's a really interesting thing. And you know, you said as a former Ford dealer, and it's kind of interesting. I think, do you guys still have the same Ford number phone number as your old Ford store?
We do. The number, yeah, goes all the way back to probably my grandfather.
Yeah, it was funny when I wrote it down this morning. I'm like, I seem to remember calling that number looking for parts when I was a mechanic. So, which is one of the reasons why we bought our Volkswagen from you. There's a lot of Volkswagen dealers, but I like the idea of buying from, you know, a dealership that, you know, we were in when we bought our Volkswagen a couple of years ago. You were there, and that doesn't happen at a lot of dealerships. And I think that makes it you know, gives you a little bit of a different advantage than some of these gigantic dealership, which, you know, everybody tries to do the best job, but the idea that I can go over and say, hey, Paul, can I ask you about this? And you don't get that at every dealership. And that's kind of nice to see.
Thank you. Yeah. I like talking to people. I'm here all the time. I'm certainly accessible. I'm out around talking to service customers and sales customers all the time. And, you know, we understand we have to be competitive on price with all the big dealers and the big dealer groups, and you know, we look at it to make sure that we are, but we also want you as a repeat customer.
Right.
We want you to tell your family, your friends, your coworkers that, you know, we're a good place to get a car, and, you know, we'll recognize you when you come in for service, and maybe I'll talk to you when you're in for service also.
Yeah, no, it's and again, you know, Paul Clark, Volkswagen, Brockton, you're right on the Brockton-Easton line. I'm going to call it a new facility, even though how many years you've been there now?
Since 2007.
Yeah, well, it's like just yesterday.
Right, I agree.
Yeah. And as a former Ford dealer, what do you think about Ford not building any more passenger cars except for the Mustang?
I'm kind of shocked. I
yeah.
mean, you know, maybe you want to roll that business back a little bit, but I mean, there's great demand for passenger vehicles, and shocked. We'll see how it all works out for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the idea of no Taurus, no Fusion, no Focus, no Fiesta, no nothing. Just seems Tour kind of
goes way back.
Yeah, seems kind of like it seems like kind of odd stuff. So Paul Clark Volkswagen, you're located on the Brockton Easton line. What's the actual address?
122 Liberty Street, Brockton, and 508-587-9040.
Paul, as always, thank you. And you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the program, you said treating customers a certain way. You want to have them come back. Well, I can't afford to buy a car all the time, but I can afford to have you on the show once in a while and talk about what's going on at Volkswagen and how things are going and some of the new products and your website is, I don't know, paulclarkvolkswagen.com or something like that.
Yep, paulclarkvw.com.
Yep, and I dealt with Anthony, great guy, one of your salespeople there, good guy to deal with, and I recommend if you're looking for a Volkswagen or a good quality used car or one of these new diesels that are coming back to market, check them all out, right?
Please do. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right, take care, Paul.
Thank you. Nice speaking with you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Paul Clark of Paul Clark Volkswagen. I have to bite my tongue. I keep wanting to say Paul Clark Ford because that's how he knew his father and his grandfather, and they had a great little Ford dealership down in Brockton. And Volkswagens are good cars.
You know, Volkswagen for me is like the car that I always forget about because I just don't think of them.
Hmm.
When I think of German cars, I think of BMW.
Yeah.
But I've never really been in a Volkswagen that I didn't like. I just don't think of them for
yeah no the reason. Old Tiguan I thought was too small. The Touareg was okay. I just found there was some things about the Touareg I didn't like. It was like because I get out of one car and get in another car, I tend to throw a lot of stuff in center consoles and cup holders, and it didn't have the spaces I wanted to put the junk that I carry with me. But if I was in the car, you know, I'd put that stuff in the glove compartment or, you know, tuck it away somewhere. But if I'm only in the car for a few days or a week, I've left stuff in cars before. So,
and actually, when you do think of Volkswagen, you think of their iconic Beetle. But,
right.
And I can't really fit in a Beetle.
You
so
can.
Now.
You'd be surprised. Now you can. Now you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not because you've gotten shorter.
No.
No.
Even though I think I have shrunk a little bit.
But everybody does. when you get up in the morning, you're taller than you are when you go to bed at night. Yeah. So everybody shrinks a little bit it's one of those cars like you mentioned that some people sort of forget about. The Golf's a great car. The new Jetta. I have seen one. I haven't driven it yet. And the new Atlas, their big SUV, is a market they never really had before. So we'll wait and see how it all goes. But I think for people that like that European feel, I don't think anybody builds as nice of interior for the money as Volkswagen
does.
You know, where. They obviously steal heavily from Audi when they do that. And even you look at cars that are competitive with Audi, like BMW and Lexus, you still look at the Audi interior and go, they did a nice job with this. And my wife's old Volkswagen, she had an old Cabrio that we bought new and had it for like 11 years or 12 years or something. And that car always was, you looked at the interior, and even though it was a plain basic model, it still was a car that did all it was supposed to do, and it had a comfortable, nice interior, and it looked like it worked out real well for that. So it was always good to see. So it was Volkswagen. You know, if you're looking at that kind of car, they just didn't have an SUV for me. Like I said, I had driven the Tiguan, nice car. Liked the way it handled, liked the way it felt. Just wasn't quite for me. And that's why there's 365 makes and models of cars for sale on the road.
And are they? Did I read not too long ago that they are bringing back their old bus?
Sort of. It's going to be a little smaller. It's going to be all electric.
Yes, I read that.
Oh, so it's It's not the hippie van it used to be, and people love that van.
It's amazing,
and it's like a lot of things that get better with time. They were awful.
They were terrible.
terrible. They had no power. You could barely get up a steep hill. They blew over in a windstorm. But they were fun.
Yeah.
They were fun looking. They were fun to throw a bunch of people in and stuff inside of it.
Yep.
I remember the last full-size Volkswagen van, and it was hard to call it a minivan when the last one that came out that was truly a Volkswagen before they, for a while, they sort of shared something with the Chrysler Town & Country. But it was a big van, and it was, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same old Volkswagen bus.
No.
And when I see one, or whether it's someone has done up to make it look like a 60s van, so they put a picnic, box on the roof or whatever, or if I see one that's just somebody who's just driving it because that's what they drive, they still kind of bring a smile to your face, and they're fun. So.
Their old thing.
Oh yeah, no, the things are very collectible now,
and you could like change parts out of those things. The thing,
yeah,
like, really easily.
Yeah, they were amazingly simple, like all Volkswagens were. When I was in Acton Thursday night, I drove by a guy's house, and he had a old Barracuda, maybe a 66 or 5, for sale. And he also had either a Volkswagen Squareback or a Volkswagen Type 3. I didn't look at it quick enough, other than what scared me about it was turquoise. Painted turquoise, but I guess he's on a big piece of farm property out in Acton, and he trades his, gets stuff in, does some work to it, and puts it out for sale. But just the idea that there were these kind of three or four odd cars for sale on his property was kind of fun. So one thing before, I don't know what happened to John in Boston. I was just about to go to him. John, call back. Also, Rick, if you're listening. Somehow I lost your address last week, and
not my fault.
It's not Dennis's fault. I lost it, and call in with your address again so I can send you out the Grip cell phone mount so your friends can be safe. You were going to give it away too. So bring us back up for that so we can get there, and let's talk to John before we lose him again. John, good morning.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, John. We look forward to your show.
Well, thank you.
Hey, I was wondering if you got a chance to see that Change V8070 electric Sprinter type van that's not made by Mercedes-Benz.
I have only seen it in pictures. I haven't gotten to see it in real life. Although I understand there was one out here there's one coming out for some event. It's going to be in the Boston area somewhere.
I guess Ryder's renting them out. Ryder Trucks is going to be renting them out. And I was going to say, where's Herb Chambers when you need him? Herb, here's a chance to be a dealer.
Well, he's I'm sure if there's money in it, Herb will be interested in it because he's a Vespa dealer. He's a smart EV dealer. He has just about every dealership other than Subaru. So.
Yeah, Subaru or Mitsubishi. I was wondering about that too. Yeah,
Mitsubishi makes a pretty nice Outlander plug-in hybrid now, which they did a really good job with it. So Mitsubishi, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Mitsubishi, because for all intents and purposes, they are going to be owned by Nissan.
That's what I heard. They're bought up by Nissan.
Yeah. Yeah, well, kind of. They bought the controlling. They bought the controlling shares of stock, so they're a majority shareholder, similar to back years ago when Ford bought, I think, 30% of Mazda's stock, which made them like the majority stockholder. So even though they technically sort of owned Mazda at the time, they didn't necessarily own them outright. And then when the economy went bad, Ford sold all that stock to generate money. They sold Jaguar and Land Rover and Volvo and sold all of that. And then now I don't know what's going on with them, with the idea that they're going to stop selling passenger cars. So
They're going to make the Mustang. But is it true that Ford is going to go into electrification, the Edison program, they call it?
Well, they keep talking about it.
Maybe
But I don't know how good, some SUVs work out pretty well as either electrified, pure electric, or serious hybrid electric cars, or extended range electric cars, similar to like the Chevy Volt concept. But it'll be interesting to see how it's all going to shake out, because not everyone, like Paul Clark was saying, not everyone wants to buy an SUV. And if Ford's only thinking of, okay, we're going to go with our new electrification program, and you can buy the equivalent of a electric EcoSport, an electric Escape, an electric Explorer. Not everybody wants an SUV, so I don't know. We'll have to wait and see whether this was the right decision or the wrong one.
Well, that's what I think may be the reason why Ford's cutting back what they're building now for the electric program that happened.
Well,
yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
The previous president of Ford announced probably 3 or 4 years ago that they're not in the car business anymore. They're in the transportation and technology business, and they were talking about self-driving cars, which now they're not going to have a car that's self-driving because that was a fusion, and they were going to talk about a lot of rideshare possibilities, electric bicycles, and a lot of things that kind of are niche sort of things. But I is it still selling a bunch of cars? And I don't know. We'll have to wait and see where this is going to go and see how it's going to work out for them. So,
is Ford building the electric Fusion in 2018?
The electric Fusion in 2018?
Yeah.
Not a pure electric. It's a plug-in hybrid in 2018.
Well, they did have a pure electric, but they don't promote it. You never heard much about it all these years.
No. They had a pure electric Focus.
Focus.
I don't know if they're building it for 2018 or not. They built it for 2017.
Yeah, 2013, I think they started, 2012, and haven't been promoting it at all.
No, because it wasn't a very good car. It only had about a 75-mile range, and it just didn't, there were some electrics that, and pretty much all of the electrics, if you want to replace a car in your household, a car that only goes 70 or 80 miles between charges for most people is certainly adequate, but psychologically it's not.
Well,
so,
to me, it's more like a walk or run, that's for sure.
That's right.
But
if you're, the average person drives about 30 miles a day.
Right.
That's all the average person drives. And if you had a car that has a 70 or 80 mile range, that's fine. Unless you were going to, say, drive from Boston to Provincetown, well, you wouldn't have enough battery to get there. So, and then if you're going to drive from Boston to Plymouth, you'd have enough power to get there. You wouldn't have enough to get back. And depending on where you go to charge, if you found a level 2 charging station, yeah, you could probably charge sufficiently back up in 3 or 4 hours. So if you went down to Plymouth and you found a place to plug in and charge, and you walked down to the Mayflower for a while, you went and got an ice cream and bought a t-shirt, you'd probably kill enough time to recharge the battery in the car. So I think Nissan was smart with the new Nissan Leaf. It's got about 150 mile range.
Yeah,
the Chevy Bolt, which I have yet to drive, has a really good range, similar to the Tesla 3, actually a little bit better than the Tesla 3. So we're starting to see some longer-range electric vehicles, and those are the ones that are that I think will be a true substitute for people's cars. I mean, you talk to people with a Tesla S, and it's got a 220, 250-mile range, and for those people, it works out fine. They can't drive it enough. And, people drive them to Florida and plug into one of their Tesla fast charge stations. 20 minutes later, they have another 150 miles on it. They can drive some more, and they can kind of make their way through it and see what happens.
It's a car I miss, Mitsubishi. They have the iMiEV, and they only, in 5 years, that they sold from 212 to 217, They only sold around 2,000 of them. And how many TV, radio, advertisement commercials did you see for it? None.
Yeah, well,
in 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a car that and another one of those cars. Every once in a while, I see one in Boston down off of Mass Ave somewhere. I don't see very many of them, you know. And still, I think even as things are going to develop and change, I think we're still electric cars until the infrastructure changes where people can charge up. I think it's still going to be a real small percentage of the industry, you know, maybe 1, 2, 3, 5% until, you know, you can charge up quicker and easier and it becomes cost effective. Right now, if you looked at buying a Nissan Leaf, you could also go out and buy the equivalent size gas car and probably get, and, you know, overall you would have to say, okay, I'm going to have to keep the Leaf 5 or 6 more years than I would normally to make up for the extra cost of the electronics and it all. So it's an interesting thing. So
I was at the New York Auto Show, and I like the Mitsubishi Mirage, but the representative said a lot of people come and laugh at it because it's a 3-cylinder, but it gets around 40 miles a gallon.
Yeah, no, it's I remember years ago.
If you're an electric, if you want to be somewhat environmentally footprint.
Yeah. No, there's in fact, AAA is coming out with their latest version of the Green Car Guide. I think it's sometime next week. And what it really does is it combines. It looks at doing comparisons, so you don't need to necessarily buy an electric car to be kind to the environment. You just if you
40 miles a gallon if you
yeah.
can.
But if you need an electric car, or you need a car that gets good gas mileage, look at the one that's going to get the best fuel economy. So if you're looking at a minivan, for instance, and you're like, well, you know, I'm looking at this minivan, I don't know which one I want. Look at the one that's going to be the greenest and best for you. Hey, we got to get going. We got work to do here.
Good job.
All right. Thanks, John.
Good show.
Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Let's talk to Peter in Salem. Peter, is that you? Peter.
Yes, John.
There you are.
Hi. How are you?
I was a little quicker than Dennis was on the button, so.
Oh, boy. It's age, John. I just wanted to comment on Ford not making cars except for the Mustang.
Yes.
Well, if we go, of course, we always think in terms of the Edsel, right?
I believe someone used that as a comparison last week.
Yes, but in 1955, they came up with the Reif report, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to try to sell cars like General Motors, and that was the premise behind the Edsel.
Mm-hmm.
But Ford as a company and its heritage has always been an entry-level car company.
Right.
And since before the Model T, before 1908,
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to take all of that heritage and tradition and throw it out and send people to the Japanese and the Korean car manufacturers.
Yeah. And it's sort of interesting. It's sort of interesting because I don't think it was Henry Ford who said it, but Henry Ford had or first said it, but Henry Ford did certainly say it, and he said, you know, I won't get the quote right, but, you know, those that don't know history are destined to repeat it.
Exactly.
And for them to, like you said, to be in the entry-level car business, you know, not Mercury, not Lincoln, but to be, you know, to be the working people's car that, you know, the people that worked in the assembly line, if you want to call it that, for the Model T could actually go out and buy one. And
the
idea that all of a sudden now they're going to focus more on SUVs that they, frankly, and they admit it, are higher profit-making vehicles than making Ford Fusions and Tauruses and Fiestas and Focuses. So higher profit also means higher prices. So you're right. All of a sudden, Ford's going to be become sort of an elitist company that you can only buy an SUV that's over $30,000?
Yeah, right. And in that market, John, there's so many of them that are better than Ford's. And, I think the strategy is insane. They should come up like I've always said, with like a Corolla.
Yeah.
You know, an entry-level good car that people, I know they had a lot of problem with the Focus transmission.
Yeah,
but we have
about 40 of them at work, and I think we put 80 transmissions in.
Oh, that's a sin.
Yeah.
You know, for a car.
Now, granted, we use them for driving school, and they get, you know, it's a lot of reverse to drive, three-point turns, stuff like that. But the transmissions are not holding up. And if they're not holding up for that kind of service, you know, over time, when the car gets to be 7 or 8 years old, you're going to have the same problem with it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just a shame to take the Heritage from, let's say, 1908 to now and just throw it out. And
yeah. No,
I expect people to buy Mustangs and SUVs and big trucks. That's insane.
No, I was talking to John Zangari the other night. Him and his brother do drive-through radio down in Rhode Island, and we were talking about how, you know, he kind of felt the same way with the Oldsmobile and Pontiac.
Right.
You know, that those cars had a history and a heritage, and, you know, all of a sudden GM decided in cost-cutting, it didn't make sense because the stockholders didn't see the value in it, but the public still did. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Peter, always insightful.
Okay, John.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Our phone number, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's talk to Frank in Melrose. Frank, good morning.
Good morning, John Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
That's good. I got a question on my 88 Corvette, right? I changed the slave cylinder and the master on the firewall for the clutch.
Yeah.
And when I was bleeding it, the other guy that was pumping the clutch pedal said that it wouldn't go down all the way. It was only going down like halfway when I was bleeding it. I'm saying, like, I never heard of bleeding anything that the pedal didn't travel all the way down.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And, but the thing is, I tried it and started it up, and it seems to be releasing, engaging the tranny very low off the floor.
Okay.
Which it always did since I bought the car like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But I'm really not familiar with hydraulic clutches. I mean, I had a mechanical in my old Vet, you know, with the road linkage, stuff like that. And I was wondering, maybe this is a bizarre idea, but I was saying, I wonder if I can have I know a guy that's a machinist. And I was thinking that push rod there that goes into the throat bearing, you know, arm, if I could make it one longer so I didn't have all that travel. You know, it's supposed to be a new clutch. It's in it.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, the other thing is look on the see if there's an adjustment on the rod that goes from the clutch pedal to the master cylinder. You know, there could be an adjustment on there that's worth.
Yeah, when I changed it, the master cylinder there, it's just a fixed rod,
nothing, no adjustment on it. Okay.
Zero. Yep. Yeah.
And there's no adjustment. There's no adjustment on the push rod to the.
No, it's a piece of metal.
Yeah.
Just a rounded ends, you know, pointed on one end more than the other.
Yeah, so
I'm saying, like, if I know this machinist, but I wouldn't know how much longer to make it. It'd probably be
And it's not gonna change it much because it might only be, you know, 3/16 or a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, I'd like to know if anybody else, you know, with an 88 or an older Corvette, if that's common for them to. Like, when I bought the car, the guy that owns this, you know, he has tons of Corvettes, this guy. He's a collector, him and his father over in Peabody. And I was wondering if that's common, because he told me, oh, yeah, you got to push the clutch pedal to the floor to shift it. You know, and I'm saying, like, geez, why does it have to go to the floor to disengage?
And, you know, for me, that's the way that I always, you know, I kind of like it. I'll read you what it says here. It says, with the engine running at normal operating temperature and brakes applied, hold the clutch pedal fully depressed and move transmission selector between first and reverse several times. If the transmission selector can be moved without binding or gear clash, the clutch is releasing properly. If the shifter cannot be moved or if gear class is evident, inspect clutch pedal bushings for damage or wear. Replace as needed. If bushings are satisfactory, check clutch pedal travel. Clutch pedal travel should be 7 3, just about 7 1/4 inches.
Uh-huh.
So that clutch has got a long travel on it. So yeah, from the floor where it just starts to grab, yeah, that's the full travel. So I would say that's perfectly normal.
That's pretty. You think that's working?
Yep.
It's supposed to.
Yep.
The other question I have on that car is the idle is erratic after you drive it and all of a sudden it starts increasing. And then, you'll pull up to a light, and the thing will start going like 1,000 RPMs more than the normal idle speed. You know, it does it infrequently. You know what I mean? It doesn't do it all the time. But is there a control on the idle for that, Beth, or to?
Yeah, I mean, there is. I would suspect, though, that there's a idle air control. It could be dirty, but I'd also suspect that maybe there's a little bit of a vacuum leak somewhere. So I think what could be happening is you're getting a little bit of a vacuum leak. The car's making up for it. It's bumping the idle up so it won't stall. And then, once it cures itself for whatever reason, it kind of comes back to normal, 650 RPM or whatever it's supposed to idle at. So I would that's kind of where I would be looking. Like I said, there's a idle speed control unit on that that could be a problem. But before I suspect that it's really a problem, I would look for a vacuum leak of some sort. You know, is it the vacuum? You know, is it a line? You know, there's a dozen vacuum hoses under the hood of that car, plus the intake manifold, plus the gasket around. You know, the throttle body itself. I would look at all of those places and look for leaks, even to the point where you might want to have a shop smoke the car where they have a little smoke generator they hook up to it, and then look for smoke leaking out somewhere, and that'll tell you if there's a vacuum leak somewhere. But somebody could take a look at that. Even somebody what I used to use to find vacuum leaks. Was I had a bottle of propane and a little hose that ran off of it, and you'd kind of use propane and inject it around all the nooks and crannies, and if you heard the idle all of a sudden pick up, you knew that there was a vacuum leak there somewhere. So, a little bit of time under the hood, I think you can smooth it out without, it may not be any parts need to be replaced other than a vacuum hose or fix a leak or something.
Very good.
Okay.
Appreciate the information.
All right. Thanks, Frank. Take care. Let's talk to Mike in Cambridge. Michael? Mike?
Hi, John Paul.
There
good
you
morning.
Are.
I was wondering what you thought of the Mitsubishi Outlander Sport. I've been reading reviews from people that bought them, and they seem to love them. So.
Yeah, it's a nice little SUV. The one thing that I would say that it isn't is sporty. I think it's a solid little car. I think it does a nice job, but it's kind of funny, as they called it a sport, and a lot of car companies do that. It's not necessarily a sporty car. It's just
right.
I would certainly take a look at it. Price-wise, it's also a pretty good value. So
yes, they seem to like the 2.4 liter engine. It gives it a little more power.
Well, everybody wants a little bit more power, so.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was just looking at Consumer Reports, and they said the shortened version of the Outlander has less rear seat headroom or leg room and cargo space, despite the name. When it comes to driving, it's not exactly sporty. I guess I just said that. Handling isn't as nimble, and acceleration is just adequate. The addition to the 2-liter engine, a more powerful 2.4-liter engine is available. The choppy ride, the cabin's a little bit noisy. Still, it has a commanding seating position as well as passenger cargo versatility. Top-of-the-line all-wheel drive version can get expensive enough that the Outlander Sport starts to compete with better better SUVs. Recent updates include redesigned steering wheel and new 6.1-inch audio display and new fabric for the seats. I mean, they rated as reliability good, satisfaction a little bit low, and I'd agree with that. But they also have a fantastic warranty. They have a warranty that pretty much parallels the drivetrain warranty on Kia and Hyundai.
Right. See, I only do about 4,000 miles a year, and that's mostly city. So
yeah. Now, being a low miles driver like that, would you ever consider leasing?
Nah, I haven't really thought about it, but I suppose that's a better idea.
Well, it's interesting because I had this conversation with a guy just yesterday, and he drives probably twice what you do, but still not a lot of miles.
Right.
And I said to him, you know, leasing's a good alternative. You know, you might be able to lease something like maybe like that for, you know, $189 a month with a couple thousand dollars down, and at the end of the lease, you have the option to buy the car or just turn it back in at the end of 3, 4, 5 years, however long it is. And somebody else that I was talking to leased a Honda CR-V for $219 a month. And at the end of 3 years, they bought the car for $15,000, which was about $3,000 less than the retail price if you went out to buy a used one. So,
wow.
You know, so it's something to consider. I haven't leased a car personally. I think Dennis, did you lease your Rogue?
Yeah, I'm leasing it right now.
Yeah, so Dennis is leasing his Nissan Rogue. And again, the possibility, the thoughts are when you're done is you decide if it's a good car, you might want to keep it. If you decide you want to, you know, put a few more miles in it, by the time your lease is up, your son will be almost old enough to drive.
He will be old enough to drive. That's the scary part.
Yeah. So then all of a sudden now you have a car for him.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Hopefully he's not listening.
Yeah.
All right. All right. You take care now. Yep.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the GMC Sierra Denali pickup truck, which, we didn't talk about last week. And also, we're going to give away two things. We're going to give away a Grip cell phone mount and, as a runner-up prize, a Wheels TV hat. Everybody likes hats. Where's your hat?
At home.
We'll be right back. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, or 100.3 FM. Our phone number is 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes. Giddy up, 409. Before I knew there would be a time. Giddy up, 409. When I would buy a brand new 409.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. That birthday song that came up, the, you know, birthday commercial.
The thing with the sick horn?
That one, yeah. It's sort of a birthday anniversary.
Really?
For me.
Why?
Here.
Really?
11 years.
Wow.
Yeah. 11 years. WJDA, where I was at for WJDA and WESX, where I was at for, I'm going to say 10 years, but I'm not sure. I started to do the math one time and figured out where I have come from. And they went off the air 11 years ago, the last Sunday in April. It went off the air as we knew them, as a local South Shore, North Shore radio station. And I started here the next week. So I came here. I didn't miss a week. I came here, and we were across the street. It was a business talk station Then there was some changes that happened. The business talk station became what is now Radio DJ, the Spanish station.
Correct.
And the general manager who was here at the time said to me, we want to move you over to the Irish, right before the Irish programming on 950. And I'm like, sounds okay to me. So we
and
did
I've
it.
Been here for, even though I was gone for a couple of years, I've been here for most of that.
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Were you ever across, you weren't across
I wasn't
the
across the street. Yeah. I didn't start working with you until you were in your little isolation booth here, and
right.
I was in the actual
yeah.
studio.
Yeah. Yeah, that studio is kind of interesting. And for people who can't see inside here.
And don't know about
yeah,
radio.
Yeah. Where Dennis and I are literally sitting right opposite each other. Where in the next studio over, we were separated by a glass partition. But now they don't do that anymore. They just do everything in the one studio. But it was, and it was kind of backwards, too, because it should have been the other way around.
Yes.
You should have been in the room I was in, the studio I was in, and I should have been in the other studio, but it didn't work that way.
Now that we've lost all our listeners.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, sorry about that. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. It's time to do some sort of a trivia question.
Oh, boy, joyous times.
And we are going to talk about the GMC Sierra Denali pickup truck. But currently, GMC has a commercial, and it has a sort of saying in it. GMC is something. I want to know what that is. They don't say GMC is a wicked good truck, but they do say something. And if you know the answer to that, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, and we will give you a cell phone holder. It's worth about $30. And I used it. We actually did a video at work the other day, and we needed. Yes, you are correct.
I win. No call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please call.
Yes, please call. 617-770-3030. What is their current slogan, I guess, is the right terminology. But well, I remember when pickup trucks were basic work vehicles with AM radios, crank windows, basic heat, even without air conditioning. Today's trucks are designed, in some cases, like luxury cars while still able to carry cargo, tow heavy loads, and in some cases, travel off-road. One truck that combines all these features is the GMC Sierra Denali 1500 pickup. The latest 1500 has heated and cooled seats, heated steering wheel, automatic climate control, dual zone, by the way, a full infotainment system, including built-in 4G LTE Wi-Fi. In addition, safety is addressed with the latest features such as low-speed automatic braking, lane-keeping assistant with lane departure warning, smart headlights to dim to oncoming traffic, all kinds of features. Our road test was in the four-wheel drive crew cab version of the GMC 1500 powered by the 6.2-liter V8 engine connected to an 8-speed automatic transmission. Now, this was the Denali version, so, of course, it's got all the luxury features in it. The cabin of this big truck is a nice place to spend some time. The seats are comfortable and supportive. The controls are simple to operate. The cabin is extremely quiet. Shorter drivers will appreciate the multi-adjustable seats and power-adjustable pedals. The rear seat also accommodates adults, which some four-door pickup trucks, the back seat gets a little tight. That's not the case in this one. Entry and exit is made easier with powered running boards. They're just fun to watch. You open the door, they fold out, fold back in. And it does actually make a pretty practical to get in and out of it. There's a large center console for storage, a double glove compartment, other bins and cubbies. A 6'6" cargo box is equipped with tie downs and a cargo hold to hold cargo in place. It has this easy opening and closing tailgate, so it's really just the old pickup trucks of old tailgates were heavy. the new pickup truck, you know, new pickup trucks, they're all assisted, and this is one of them, so it makes open and closing the tailgate really easy. Handling is pretty good for a truck. The ride's a bit on the firm side, most likely due to the four-wheel drive suspension, and optional 22-inch all-terrain tires. I remember once upon a time when 20-inch tires were considered outrageous. You have 20-inch wheels? Dubs? You have dubs? Now, 22-inch tires on a pickup truck. Fuel economy is rated at 15 city, 20 miles per gallon on the highway. This engine uses a fuel management system that, when appropriate, switches off to four cylinders. With a little careful gas pedal management, I was able to do a little bit better, up to about 21 miles per gallon, according to the onboard trip computer. So the bottom line is, if you're looking for a pickup truck that has the grunt to pull a trailer, the ability to handle tough off-road situations, and still have all the creature comforts of a luxury vehicle, take a look at the GMC Sierra Denali. The engine in this, a V8, which can switch to a V4, technically, which generates 420 horsepower. Miles per gallon, 15 city, 20 on the highway. I did just a little bit better. And luxury car price, $64,345. It's funny, I was visiting some people up in Lynn, and there was somebody next door, the people who live next door, and they had a pretty nice Ford F-150. And he came over and he said, "Do you mind if I look at your truck?" I said, "Sure." And I said, he said, "Wow, this is really nice." I said, "Yeah, it's a really nice truck." I said, "It's also a really expensive truck." He said, "How much is it?" And I said, "Well, it's about $65,000. And he looked at me and said, "That's not bad."
No. For a pickup truck, I understand the designs and the interiors now, but still, it's a pickup truck.
Heated and cooled seats, heated steering wheel.
I get it.
Pretty nice.
I get it.
Pretty nice inside.
I get it, but if I'm going to get a luxury car, I'm going to get a luxury car, not a luxury pickup. I'm sorry.
Suppose
I guess
you want...
I guess if I'm working in it all day, it's one thing. I get it, but yikes.
I mean, if you are actually doing real work.
Yeah. But yikes.
And you got in it at the end of the day and your back hurt and you're like, you know, I'm turning on the seat heaters.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I guess. And but on the other hand, all cleaned up, it's beautiful. And if you're somebody that cares about what their vehicle looks like and could you bring this to the Ritz-Carlton and have the valet park it and not be ashamed of it? Absolutely. I remember years ago I was going to the Ritz-Carlton in my 1987 Dodge Caravan.
Oh, boy.
I pulled up to the valet, and he told me to move along.
What? Really? Yeah. Move along?
And it was only 3 years old, so it was like 1990, I guess.
Still.
And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, pull that over there." I said, "No." And he said, "What do you want?" I said, "For you to park my car." And then I looked behind me. There was a Rolls Royce. So I'm sure... He may have been thinking my tip might have not been as good as his. Reality, I probably over-tipped.
Bad business decision.
I know. Anyway, let's see if we have an answer to the GMC sales slogan. Let's talk to Mike in Revere. Michael.
Hi, Doc. Good morning.
Good morning.
Revere. I think they said at that commercial, "We are professional grade."
You are correct. You are correct.
Don't listen to that music. There's the right music.
But you are correct. Professional grade.
Correct.
So what we'll do, we will get you out in the mail this grip all-in-one cell phone holder so you can mount it on your dash, you can mount it on your windshield, you can hold a cell phone in it, you can hold a GPS in it. It's a great little unit from DE World is the name of the company that supplied it to us. And Isaac Kopolovitz was on the show a couple weeks ago, and he offered them up to help keep people safe. So we will get you out one of those.
Thank you very much.
All right, stay right there.
I was listening to your show.
Thank you very much. And Dennis, do we still have a runner-up on the phone there?
No, they all dropped.
They all dropped? Too bad. We have a runner-up prize, the Wheels TV hat. Pretty cool hat. One size fits all. Tell you what, if you want the Wheels TV hat, we'll do a random pick. So if you want a Wheels TV hat from Wheels TV out in Acton. They're the ones that provide, if you go on dealer websites and you want to look at some of the videos that dealerships have about certain cars, they're the ones that provide them all. Also, on some of the cable TV networks, on the Cars channel, they provide some of the video for that. Wheels TV, before it was Wheels TV, used to be the Speed Channel. And Jim Barisano, who owns Wheels TV, started the Speed Channel, and then it got bought by ESPN, and then he bought a Corvette or something. I don't know what he did afterwards. But good guys over there. They do a lot of video work. They have a good video production group over there. So if you would like the Wheels TV hat to be a little bit different than all your friends, just call in and say to Dennis, give me the hat. I want the hat. And we'll give you a hat. We'll put it in the mail to you. And also, I feel badly, Rick, our buddy from Boston, who listens almost all the time, I lost his address last week.
He's mad at you.
I know. He's mad at me. He's like, I didn't get my phone holder. And it's funny. We're actually at work. We're doing a press conference this week to talk about the new handheld phone ban that's going to be taking place in Rhode Island. And we ordered some little cell phone holders. They just sort of stick on your air vent on your car, and then they're springy, and it will hold your cell phone in place. And we have some to give away at the press conference. And I looked at them, and they're nice enough, and they say AAA on them, so that's all good. But we are going to give those away at the press conference. But they're not anywhere near as good as this is. Should all recalls trigger free loaners for owners? Well, is Honda's aggressive response to the Takata airbag crisis a special remedy for unique challenging circumstances or a template for the industry to follow? That's the question at the heart of a debate over whether consumers deserve access to free loaner vehicles when their own vehicle are under recalls for a safety defect.
Sorry, breaking news. We have a hat winner. No more calls for
that. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. We have a hat winner and a good hat winner. And we'll get to that's a good reminder for something coming up, too. So that's the question at the heart of a debate over whether consumers deserve access to a free loaner car. The Takata case has proved so large and so complex it forced regulators and automakers to develop special strategies, including industry-wide action plans and phased recalls of airbag inflators that are likely to develop a defect over time. Given the severity of the defect, life-saving safety component that can become deadly projectile, Honda and a few other manufacturers have made it easier for concerned consumers to obtain loaners while they're awaiting delivery of their replacement parts. But two Senate Democrats say consumers should be entitled to free loaners or rental cars on any type of safety recalls, not just the ones with high-risk parts and the rare do-not-drive order. In their view, all recall vehicles are inherently unsafe to drive. Safety advocates say stricter loaner policies also would provide financial motivation for automakers to expedite production of parts and boost repairs. We'll have to see where that goes. It is being supported here in Massachusetts by Mr. Markey, I believe. Let's see. Because the manufacturers are the ones usually paying for the loaner vehicle, said Jason Levine, executive director of Center for Auto Safety, they can expedite parts manufacturing when they want to for profit purposes. They need to expedite parts manufacturing for safety purposes. Responding to constituent complaints, Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut and Edward Markey of our fair Commonwealth of Massachusetts last month issued a report and showed 11 out of 17 major automakers lacked policies providing loaners to customers affected by the Takata airbag recall. Lawmakers are pressuring companies such as Ford and Volkswagen of America to take voluntary action, writing that they are putting their customers at risk of death or horrific injuries. I don't know if that's completely true.
What, with the Takata?
Well, with the airbags, yes. Yeah. But they said safety recalls. Well, a safety recall can be the sticker that says airbags can cause injury, wasn't stuck to the car. A safety recall can be a jack that wasn't properly secured in the car.
This is the problem with these Senate bills. They overreact to things, and I think if they really thought about it, okay, a safety recall, if the repair is going to be more than a set amount of time, say 2 hours, you are entitled to a loaner car. And that could be, if the dealership is backed up and it's going to take more than 2 hours just to put a sticker on, you shouldn't have to be held there because they're the ones that are backed up. And they
How about if you just got a ride to work?
What if you're at work and you have to go somewhere? Like, what if an emergency comes up? I mean, yes, there's Uber and all these stuff now, but you're being put out of you're being inconvenienced because the auto manufacturer didn't do their due diligence.
Well, six companies got a passing grade according to Blumenthal and Markey, and they are BMW North America, Fiat Chrysler, Honda North America, Nissan Group of North America, Subaru of America, and Toyota Motor North America. So you're in good shape. I'm not.
Yeah.
This is what it comes down to. Why don't we take another break? Our phone lines are open right now at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. When we come back, flying cars.
Woo!
Baby. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening on AM 950. WROL, the Spirit of Boston.
Back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillacs. Every day I'd watch them beauties roll by and
welcome back to the Car Doctor Program, or the Car Wash Program. I don't know. But I will say I didn't really appreciate car washes till I did see one in California. It reminded me of, like, from that song in the movie Car Wash.
Yeah, where they all come out.
And yeah, they're like 25 people that work there. It's like, you know, it's like everybody's got a little spot they clean. And it's not like around here when our automatic car wash, they clean, like, just a couple of people come out, so it's amazing how many people work there. When John Diamond called in and won the hat, it also reminded me about the Bay State Antique Auto Club Auto Show, which will be taking place July 8th at the Endicott Estate in Dedham. First, second, third place awards for 29 classes, car corral, flea market, food court, ice cream, live entertainment featuring cousin Bruce Palmer. Walk-in admission is a $5 donation. 12 and under are free. Sponsored by Dedham Savings and, of course, the Bay State Antique Auto Club. The classes, should you be interested, are through 1993. So Brass Era T all makes to 1931, Model A, 32 to 63 modified, 32 to 43 stock, open and close, Woody's. 46 to 54 stock, T-Birds, Corvettes, Mustangs, 64 to 67 stock and modified, 68 to 70 stock and modified, 55 to 57 stock, open and closed, stock sports and foreign cars. I don't have to call them foreign cars anymore.
What's that? Well, I mean, there are some.
Yeah.
But I get what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, the GMC Sierra pickup made in Mexico.
Yep.
So is that a foreign car?
Well, no, because it's an American company, so the money comes back here.
Toyota Camry, made in the United States.
Money goes to Japan. Where's their corporate headquarters? Follow the money.
All right. T-Rods, Customs, Kit Cars, all kinds of things. Plus, they're going to have club classes for Corvette, Corvair, Oldsmobile, Lincoln, Packard, Pontiac, and race cars. Non-judge class. For some reason, Corvette, 83 to present. So all kinds of stuff. Sunday, July 8th, vendor registration is at 6. Auto registration is at 7. They're early people. They're early people. Judging begins at 10:30. Trophy presentations at 2. Show cars must be on the field in class before 10 a.m. to be judged. Pre-registration ordered until 10. Due to limited on-street parking, we recommend you use the designated free off-site parking lot located at Rustcraft Road for your convenience. Bay State Antique Auto Club will be providing a free shuttle bus. And it's only about, it's a 10-minute walk to where you park. Even though John thinks of, I'll never, ever go here again. It's not really true. I have been a couple times. And it's a good take. And starting at 6 a.m., breakfast. So
is that is the breakfast for the general public?
No, you buy breakfast.
No, I understand you buy it, is it for the general public? Yeah. Like, or is it just for the...
No, coffee, tea, bacon, ham, sausage, breakfast sandwiches, lunch menu, hot dog, sausage, hamburgers, pulled pork, look at that. Yeah, chicken tenders, fried dough, french fries, soda water, and fresh squeezed lemonade, and an ice cream truck.
And when is this again?
It is July 8th, Sunday.
I'll have to try to get there this year. I really will.
Will you?
It's right around the corner from my mom's house. I should really be able to go there.
My whole problem is that's the week I usually go on vacation down the Cape. And kind of once I'm on the Cape, I tend not to leave the Cape. In fact, I tend not to get in my car. Except to drive to the beach when I drive to the beach, but normally that's about it. I tend to walk almost everywhere when I'm down there for that, you know, kind of that Friday through following Monday. So when I never used to take the 4th of July off, that's when I used to go. But I never liked the Cape. I always felt was too crowded on 4th of July. And 20 years ago it was. Now it's not quite as crowded, so you can
it's
actually...
pretty crowded.
Yeah.
I went to the 4th of July down in Falmouth a few years ago. With my father-in-law and my son went over to watch the fireworks while my mother-in-law and my wife stayed at the house. And it was pretty crowded.
Pretty crowded?
Pretty crowded.
Well.
And I hate crowds.
Well, there you go. Let's, do we still have Richard on the phone?
Yes, we do.
Let's talk to Richard. Richard, is that you?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, good. What can we do for you?
Well, I just got a notice from the dealer.
Okay.
And I have a 5-year-old Altima.
Yep.
They're suggesting I replace the engine oil and filter, the rotate tires. Okay, that's standard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Replace the brake fluid, engine air filter, and the in-cabin microfilter. This is at 60,000 miles, which is coming up within the next couple of weeks.
How do they know you need all that stuff? What year is it? What year is it again?
It's 2013. I do just about exactly 12,000 miles a year on it. That's the way it's just worked out. But they're saying because the car is, they know that it's coming up to 60,000 miles on it because they've done the oil changes and everything, and I've got the extended warranty, which is about to end. But I'm just questioning mostly the brake fluid, air filter, and the micro, you know, the in-cabin. Is that reasonable at 60,000 miles?
The cabin air filter, it's like any air filter. You know, whether it's an air filter that is for the engine or an air filter that's for your furnace at home, they get dirty with time. So the more that you drive in dusty, dirty roads, pollen, that type of stuff, the more the filter can get dirty. So I don't really, you know, when I look at stuff like that, I look at, well, let's take the filter out and see what it looks like. Is it dirty? Does it need to be replaced? You know, Nissan will tell you that every 15,000 miles, you should put a cabin air filter in it.
Well, actually, it's 30.
Yeah, and they also say that every 30,000 miles, you should change the brake fluid. That's their recommendation right in their service procedure. So unlike some other times where you get a notice and it says, you know, we recommend you do this, 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 and this, and in fact, none of that stuff is on the factory service. On your particular vehicle, it is on the factory service. So changing brake fluid at 30,000 and 60,000 is, you know, for whatever their reason, They're thinking that that brake fluid is going to pick up moisture. That moisture is going to cause rust in the anti-lock brake system. So, you know, you should replace it.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I just needed an outside opinion.
Yep. No, one of the things I will never go against what it says in the shop manual to do things. When I see other things that say, like, you need to do this and you need to do that, and I'm like, why do you need to do those things? But, yeah, brake fluid, Honda, for instance, has a recommendation that periodically brake fluid gets changed. Other vehicle manufacturers have nothing whatsoever. So why does a Toyota say we don't have a recommendation for brake fluid change and Nissan does? It's the same brake fluid. It's basically the same parts, but for whatever the reason is, Nissan says you should do it at 30, so you should do it at 30.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, the other two, the air filter and the microfilter for the in cabin.
Yep.
How much money are we looking at for the three things? Do you have any ballpark idea?
Well, let's take a look here. The cabin filter is one of those things that, you know, if you bought it right at the Nissan dealer, it's about $20 for the cabin filter, and it's probably 5 or 10 minutes to put it in. So not a big thing to change it. And you know, the air filter, you know, probably similar enough to that. So you know, figure that the air filter is easy enough to replace, and it's going to be about $25. So, and the brake fluid is more just a labor thing, so it's probably a half an hour's worth of labor maybe to replace the brake fluid. So again, we're not talking, you know, big expensive things here, but you know, still things that, you know, by the time you're done, if you go in and you have the brake fluid replaced, the cabin filter replaced, the air filter replaced, the regular engine air filter replaced, and another oil change, you're going to leave, you know, a couple hundred dollars poorer than you went in.
Couple hundred?
Yeah.
Ooh. I was thinking more like 100 and a quarter.
Well, I'm rounded up.
All right. Okay.
All right. So, well, I mean, think, you know, 20 and 25, 45, a half an hour's labor just to do those, a little more than a half an hour's labor to do those filters. A lot of dealers are charging $120 an hour now. So there's an easy 100 for the two filters, another half an hour labor to do the brake fluid. So there's another 60 or so for that. So now we're up to 160 plus, materials, then throw the oil change in on top of it. Yeah. Couple hundred bucks.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye now. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. I think we could squeeze one more call in if we had one.
No more calls. Well, sort of. I have to mention something. Because
okay.
We were talking off the air about listeners and stuff like that. I do know that I just got a text confirmation. We do have a new listener, a guy who says that he dominates, but I dominate him on basketball on Sunday mornings when Parker School is open from the fall there.
Yep.
So just wanted to mention a little shout out there.
Okay.
Mike.
Well, you were saying, one day you were at Dunkin' Donuts or something and somebody recognized your voice.
Which I have no idea why. But that's okay.
Speaking of recognizable voices, there's Professor Paul Sullivan right there, sitting down, looking comfortable.
I love how you get texted when you get a new listener. That's cool.
I know. That's, well, I don't get a text. I don't get a text.
I got to work that out.
Yeah.
Hi.
You're just sitting there in a little low chair.
This is low, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not exactly, it looks awkward.
Well, now, you know, I've always figuratively looked up to you. Now I literally do. Yes, I look up to you.
I have no words at this point.
You don't.
So I don't.
Where all the cars go?
Because
we're banned from parking.
Yeah,
I had to walk a little bit today.
Yeah, well, you walk.
That's
a lot.
Why I need to rest.
you walk a lot.
Yeah, well, I used to. Yeah, I'm trying to get back into that habit. Well, so it's a good habit.
Based on the weather on Wednesday and Thursday, your swimming pool ready to go or
no?
No,
but I was in a swimming pool the other day, but it was down in your neck of the woods down in Florida.
Oh, yeah, I do.
You know I went down there,
I keep forgetting. Yeah. That is my neck of the woods.
That is your neck of the woods. Yeah. It's your new address.
Well, yeah. See, this is where I've always never, I never thought I would be able to.
I love when people say I always know.
I always, yeah, I know. Yeah. I had to rethink whatever it was I was going to say. But I never thought I could own something in Florida, even though, you know, and it's a mobile home, which even makes it weirder.
Yeah, but.
But because I'm one of those people that has to be able to, if the wind blows, I want to make sure everything's okay.
Right.
Until you just said that to me, I'm like, oh, yeah, I do own a place in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good thing is I keep forgetting about it.
That is a good thing, especially in light of the fact that when the hurricanes were heading that way, you couldn't forget about it.
I couldn't forget about it because it kept showing my town and a hurricane blowing through it.
Yes.
So, you know,
And my joke with Claire has always been, you know, I don't see anything wrong with mobile homes per se. In fact, I've been in some really nice ones.
Mine.
So, well, I haven't been in there yet, but I've seen pictures of it. But anyway, she said, well, you know, and the hurricanes will blow away. I said, just go where they land.
It's a mobile home.
Go, exactly. Go where they land and have a new adventure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not.
You know.
When are you going down there again? It's getting to be warm.
A couple weeks, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, technically, they're, I was listening to a local radio station down there, and they went, well, now that the season's over.
Well, yeah, and it's weird because technically when I was down there last week, I was listening to us.
Yeah.
You sounded great, by the way. I called into Bobby later because I was at the pool with little Zachary, and I'm just listening like, you know, you'd listen in
Southie
or West Roxbury.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's amazing now about radio is you can, you know, it used to be, you know, if you're old enough to remember, you know, you were standing in the corner somewhere trying to turn and twist and listen to the radio and try to get in the signal. Now you can listen any place in the world to your favorite station. So for our listeners in Florida or North Carolina or Ireland, all they have to do, they go on WROLradio.com, boom, us up.
You know, and the crazy part about that, when we started 51 years ago, of course, you couldn't do that. And so if you wanted to hear Irish music in Boston, you couldn't get an app to pull in the West of Galway radio. So you can now.
Yeah.
And so it makes it a little bit harder when you're trying to carve out some market position. But it's just glorious when someone calls from Ireland and says, hey, I'm listening to you.
Yeah, no. Rather than, and you mentioned the app besides, you know, Google and Amazon and Alexa and Siri and all that. I mean, we do. You go to the WROL, search for the WROL app in your favorite app store, and boom, it pops up. You hit it, and there you go. I listen to WROL on one app, and I listen to WENG, the little Florida radio station, on the other app.
Yeah, and the thing about it is if you have a, you know, most phones or devices have Bluetooth, so you hook it up to a really nice speaker, and we sound better than we sound here.
You do. Well, you really do.
Well, with me, anything sounds better than I sound here, but, you know, it's usually the speaker that makes it sound better.
Self-effacing humor doesn't work. No,
it doesn't work with me.
You're good.
It does.
You just don't know how good you are. You are.
Anyway, thank you all for keeping me on here 11 years, and hopefully there's 11 more years to come since this is my...
Is it your anniversary?
11th year anniversary here.
I always equate that with Mother's Day.
I was saying earlier, I never missed a Saturday. It was last Saturday at the old station, first Saturday at this. Didn't even get a Saturday off.
I've taken a couple of Saturdays.
Have you? Yeah. Hey, very best in Irish music coming up next with Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade. Until next week, make sure you drive safely, wear your seatbelt, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.